Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hi, this is Jay Richards with ID the Future, and today I'm talking with astronomer and astrobiologist Guillermo Gonzalez about the fascinating news that you may have seen a few weeks ago, actually back on April the 10th, that astronomers for the first time have, in a sense, taken a picture for the first time of a black hole. For those of you who don't know Guillermo, let me just give you a brief introduction. He's an assistant professor of astronomy and physics at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. He got his PhD in astronomy at the University of Washington in Seattle and has worked at the University of Texas at Austin, Iowa State University, and Grove City College. He specializes in stellar spectroscopy and astrobiology. He's published almost 90 papers in astronomy journals, and he's the co-author of an astronomy textbook called Observational Astronomy. And of course, most importantly, he is co-author with Jay Richards, with yours truly, of the book The Privileged Planet. But we're not going to talk about The Privileged Planet just yet. We're going to talk about that in a later podcast interview, but we're going to talk about this amazing photograph. Guillermo, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, you had this piece that was published in The Stream actually back on April the 12th. So a couple of days after news broke of this remarkable telescope photo, essentially an image of a black hole in galaxy M87. Before we get into it, though, tell listeners that don't know, what exactly is a black hole?
Well, a black hole is just an object from which not even light can escape. So, for example, the Earth has gravity, and any other body with mass in the universe has gravity, and it's hard to leave the surface of big, massive things like the Earth. We have to build big rockets, and you have to achieve a certain minimum so-called escape velocity. And for the Earth, it's about 11 kilometers per second. Now, if you increase the mass, or if you, better yet, if you take an object of a given mass and make it smaller, shrink it, and keep making it smaller, squeeze it, eventually the escape velocity reaches a point where not even light can escape. So it reaches the speed of light. So a black hole is an object from which not even light can escape.
So hence the black part of the black hole, I take it. It's black because whether you shine light to it, it disappears, presumably, and of course no light can be emitted from it. But where do black holes come from?
So we think we understand the origin of so-called stellar mass black holes pretty well. Certain types of stars that are very massive, end their lives in a very violent way, in what's called a supernova explosion. And in such a star, the core collapses, it gets squeezed down, and if it's massive enough, it gets squeezed down to the point where the escape velocity from the surface of the core becomes greater than the speed of light. And in that case, it becomes a black hole. So we think that stars that leave behind a core more than about three times the sun's mass end up forming black holes, and more massive cores will form more massive black holes. Now, the black hole in M87 and the centers of other large galaxies are much more massive than just a few times the sun's mass. They can be up to billions of times the mass of the sun. And so the origin of those is a little bit different.
Billions of times. Yes. I know. No. Well, so there's this funny term, black hole. So it's not really a hole. It's a presumably some kind of spherical object that's just extremely dense, left over from some kind of stellar explosion or something. Is that right? It's not literally a hole.
That's right. So it's what happens when you take matter, some amount of mass, and you squeeze it down so much that then not even light can escape it, and there's still something that's still there. We've just lost contact with it. There's no way to gain information from inside a black hole, really, in our universe. So we've lost contact with it, and so that's why it appears black.
So then let's talk a little bit about this photograph, or at least this image, not literally a photograph. But first of all, who did it? What was used? And how did it happen? How did we end up with this image that was, of course, on every website that I checked on April the 10th?
Yes, an amazing image. It was obtained by a consortium of about 200 astronomers all over the world working at different observatories. And what they did is they used radio telescopes on multiple continents spread all over the Earth. And they combined the signal from these different telescopes as they were looking at the same object with a technique called very long baseline interferometry, or VLBI. And that's a technique that's been used for decades now with radio telescopes to get really detailed images of objects that we cannot resolve with ordinary individual optical telescopes. But they've refined the method. They're able to work at somewhat shorter wavelengths, but still in the radio, to gain increased resolution. And so they targeted two objects. One was this black hole in the center of this giant elliptical galaxy in the Virgo cluster called M87. And then the other one is our own black hole at the center of our Milky Way galaxy, which is just a pipsqueak. It's only just over 4 million times the mass of our sun.
So they started presumably with the large one, in part because it's some distance. So I guess there's access to it in a way that maybe it's not easy to access the center of our own galaxy. But I assume the size helped with this process somewhat, right?
Yes. So the astronomers already knew the masses of these two individual black holes from other observations. The one in M87 is some 6.5 billion suns in mass. The one in our galaxy is just over 4 million suns. And so the quote size of a black hole scales with the mass. So I should say something about what I mean by size, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have a size for a black hole. So astronomers define what they call the event horizon of a black hole is that location around the black hole where light cannot escape. So if you drop a flashlight into a black hole, at a black hole, or throw a flashlight at one, the light will keep getting out and it can reach you up until the point it passes the event horizon. After it passes the event horizon, then the light from that flashlight will never be able to get out again. And so the radius of this event horizon is called the Schwarzschild radius, named after a famous astronomer who did these calculations a century ago or so. And so this was, by the way, was predicted by Albert Einstein. And so this is one of the motivations to image these black holes is to test Einstein's theories.
So these are, I know I've heard some scientists that are sort of skeptical of the existence of black holes, but are essentially a kind of prediction or an inference from Einstein's general theory?
That's right. So a black hole follows from Einstein's general theory of relativity because the object warps, an object with mass will warp the space around it, and that will affect the motion of other bodies near it. So it's a completely different conceptualization of gravity than Newton had, which was this mysterious action at a distance.
Hmm.
But according to Einstein, it's anything with mass will alter the space around it. And by altering the space, that alters the trajectories of bodies that move near it. And so that accounts for the orbits of the planets around the sun or the moon around the Earth, for example. And so he made his theory available in 1916. So it's been just over 100 years now, and made possible then this theoretical entity called the black hole, which astronomers began to find evidence for in the 1970s, never directly imaging one. It was evidence through various types of observations to give properties of the matter near a black hole and also determine the masses of black holes by studying the motion of matter near it. But never been able to get an image of the vicinity of a black hole.
So that's really what we did here then a couple of weeks ago, because there's this weird paradox in that, and you've already mentioned it a couple of times. One, light can't, not even light can escape from the sort of gravity well of a black hole. And in fact, that sort of void actually is way past the surface, if you want to speak of it that way, of the object itself out at the edge of the event horizon. So in a sense, we can't see this because it doesn't reflect light back to us. Light can't escape it. So what are we exactly, what is this image that we're seeing? I mean, I know it was done in the radio part of the spectrum, and so I assume sort of transitioned into a visible image so that we can look at it on our computer screens, but what is the image of exactly?
That's right. Good question. You would think, just looking at the picture, you'd think right off the bat that, oh, that dark hole, that black hole at the center, that's it. That's the black hole, right? Almost, not quite. As it turns out, because the gravity bends light, and so light doesn't even go along straight line trajectories, but the gravity from the black hole near it bends light so much that if just light coming from, shining from behind the black hole, mm-hmm. Doesn't just leave a little shadow or silhouette equal to the size of the event horizon. Instead, the light that's, say, just beyond the Schwarzschild radius coming at us from behind the black hole, it's bent so much that it actually goes into the black hole. And so the trajectory of light is warped dramatically from our ordinary everyday experiences of light traveling in straight lines. And so what we actually get is this shadow or silhouette that's about 2.6 times greater than the Schwarzschild radius. So the dark spot that we see in the middle of that image is quite a bit bigger than the what the actual event horizon would be in size.
Even though this itself is, as you've already mentioned, a supermassive black hole, what we're seeing is even sort of larger than the object itself. But so, or should we expect here sometime soon to get an image of our own supermassive black hole in the middle of the Milky Way?
Yes, I expect those results to be released sometime in the coming months. The data that were collected for M87 were done in 2017, so it's been 2 years now since the group has been analyzing the data. So it's that complex. It's in fact an enormous amount of data that was collected with these radio telescopes. Of course, each telescope collected so much data they actually had to send the data on hard disks, on hardware, rather than over the internet, because even the internet it would take too long to transmit that much data from each telescope. It was just
so they're mailing hard drives around each other.
Yeah, that's right. The data for the Milky Way black hole was taken a year later. So again, I expect that to be released probably within a few months is my guess.
Terrific. Well, that's fun stuff for astronomers and for astronomy geeks like me, just sort of waiting for this. I mean, I've been thinking about black holes actually since the really scientifically inaccurate Disney film Black Hole, I think, which came out back in the sixth grade, which sort of introduced it. And I can remember in junior high reading about them.
I remember watching that.
Oh, yeah. And reading Omni magazine and thinking about them as sort of portals to other universes and other parts of the universe. And even without that stuff, though, they're really cool sort of exotic objects. But, you know, this podcast is called ID the Future. And, you know, I'd be remiss if we didn't mention something about the ID angle to this. I mean, are there broader implications of black holes and of these discoveries for this question about design and purpose in the universe?
Well, I think there are. There's one very significant implication. Not only do we get a new close-up view of black holes using this new observational technique, so we learn about the properties of the black holes themselves, maybe how they grow by accreting material, but also we learn about general relativity, because general relativity is the foundational theory that allows us to predict the properties of black holes. And general relativity is also the foundational theory for modern cosmology. And so modern cosmology is built upon this theory of Einstein's, and it's also the foundational theory for, therefore, the Big Bang theory, which is built upon general relativity. So what astronomers found with their new observations of these black holes is that they fit the predictions very well. So the new observations of the black hole, M87, in fact, were kind of boring, as some astronomers said. No, there was nothing new. It was kind of everything fit perfectly what we were expecting. So it was a nice new confirmation of general relativity in the strong field regime.
Great. Yeah. So the idea. So it's not like, you know, there were plenty of evidence, obviously, for general relativity before, but this confirms it closely in general relativity insofar as it's this foundation of modern cosmology, which is Big Bang cosmology, which implies a universe with a finite past and a beginning. And of course, a universe with a beginning cries out for an explanation beyond itself. And this is something we talk about in the book, The Privileged Planet. Steve Meyer has been talking about it for years and talks about it a lot in his forthcoming book, The Return of the God Hypothesis. But it was a sort of major theme in our book together, The Privileged Planet, which we're not going to talk about right now. We're going to talk about that in another episode. So this is just a teaser for that. But for listeners that are interested in Guillermo's take on this recent discovery, this recent image of the giant black hole at the center of the elliptical galaxy M87, check out his piece from April the 12th at the stream at stream.org. The piece is called Astronomers Release First Image of a Black Hole. Guillermo Gonzalez, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
This is Jay Richards with ID the Future. Thanks for being with us.
In recent years, great leaps in DNA sequencing technologies have empowered scientists to study DNA as never before. But will Darwin's theory of evolution stand the test of this new data, this increasing evidence for design and purpose? You can find out when you read Michael Behe's revolutionary new book, Darwin Devolves, now available in bookstores and online at darwindevolves.com.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.